This episode of Storyworthy is sponsored by Story02 Software from Jungle. Listen, Story02 is fantastic. It's a way to outline and define your story. Whether you're writing fiction or nonfiction, an essay, a screenplay, a novel, Story02 Software will help you get that story out there with a beginning, middle, and end. And we always say that's what you need for a good story, an end. There are customizable story paradigms, character image packets, and the ability to import and export final drafts. So head over to junglesoftware.com and check out Story02 and enter the coupon code STORYWORTHY, all one word, to receive 10% off. Story02 by Jungle Software. There's nothing out there like it to tell your story. Your story!
Hey, this is Pete Handelman, and you are listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to the Storyworthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Finn.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with
Hannes Finney, and we're coming to you from the Barbara Gensler Theater for the Dramatic Arts at Shorewood High School, my alma mater in Shorewood, Wisconsin.
I think that's very sweet, Hannes, because that, where you went to high school, this is where you found your people. Am I
this
right?
This was the only thing I could possibly stand in high school, was to go to drama club last period of the day and then into the evening.
I think that's very
sweet. I hated everything else about high school.
Who got you into the drama club?
It just kind of just happened.
Would you see a poster for Pippin or what?
No. Pippin, by the way, was our show we did our sophomore year.
Of course
it
was.
Let me tell you something. It was fantastic.
Of course
it was. We went to the Milwaukee County High School Theater Festival.
Oh, my God. Really?
Yes. They picked three straight plays and three musicals to perform downtown. So we had to truck. We had to truck our show from our auditorium, which, by the way, has over 1,000 seats. It was a real, it's a real auditorium.
You are so cute.
To the Pabst Theater in downtown Milwaukee.
You literally glow when you talk about your high school theater days.
Yes, yes.
That
everything
is so
else about high
sweet.
School is just horrifying.
Yeah.
And they just renamed this the Barb Gensler Theater in 2012. She is the woman who directed everything. She was there for 47 years.
Oh, my
and
gosh.
She was
what an
the,
honor.
The person who made that into... And everybody thinks their high school plays are pretty good. Ours really were pretty
well,
good. For high school plays, they were really good.
Is a huge auditorium.
The auditorium was built in the 30s as part of the WPA.
Oh, wow.
As part of the...
What's that mean?
The Work Project Administration. When
sure,
the Depression
Work
came...
When, oh, yeah.
Pete, I'm sorry. Don't say anything.
FDR,
don't speak.
New Deal.
Don't speak.
Oh,
don't
God
speak.
Damn it.
Yes, FDR's New Deal, exactly.
See, this is just to show that I learned nothing in high school.
Apparently, you went to a high school in a field.
Basically,
because, yes,
that's
the WPA
exactly right.
is a gigantic project. When we had a depression, our previous depression, as opposed to the one we're in now, in order to get people to work, the WPA built schools. They worked, and the Civilian Conservation Corps worked on the national parks. And so I came, my high school is around us. A big campus looks like a very small college.
You know what is so interesting? I shit you not, I learn more from you in 2 minutes. I'm not kidding you. I retain more information that you tell me sitting across from me. And I know you from almost 20 years now.
Yeah.
You make things clearer than I ever learned in high school or college.
That's true.
It's true.
And yet... I don't have a penny. What is wrong with America today?
Well, the thing is, like, talent, skill, knowledge, it doesn't translate.
Right. If it's, I could be like, you know, in a you know, get tenure somewhere and just blah, blah, and talk like this
mm-hmm.
and bore people.
Okay, well, let's talk about why are we even at the high school, Hannes. Go ahead. You give them the good
news. Because our topic today is high school hijinks.
That's right. And it comes to us from comedian Pete Handelman. Pete Handelman, he's a real treat, Hannes. I'm excited
he is.
He's here.
I can't even get a handle on him. He's such a... thank you. I'm leaving
That's
now.
Upset. That's upsetting.
And I'm out the door.
I wonder if he could play really the same jokes on his last name as Chelsea Handler, you know?
Ah.
Handler, Handelman. Here's what I know.
Yeah.
He brought fine pastries.
He brought,
that
yeah.
That really
yeah.
puts
said,
the guest
He said,
up.
Hannes, I hear you talk about food all the time.
Mm-hmm.
After 4 years, finally somebody was smart enough to realize that if they brought treats with them,
mm-hmm.
they'd get a better show.
240 guests now.
Yeah.
And
the
no,
only
no,
one.
No, that's not the only one. No. I think it was Blanket Patch brought a pie, I think. Somebody brought a pie. I forget who it was.
Blanket Patch brought a pie? That sounds like it's the beginning of a joke. Two Jews walk into a bar with Blanket Patch, and he says, do you have any pie?
No, it sounds like the name of an album. You know, and he's a guitar player. Maybe that could be the name of his album. Yeah.
Brings the pie.
Blanket Patch brought a pie.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Pete Handelman is here. We're excited to talk to him.
He's from Copenhagen Pastry. Let's give him a little shout out.
Oh, that's nice. The pastry. I don't know if you need to give that out, because I have a feeling Pete paid for them. So we should just shout out to Pete Handelman.
Fuck you, Copenhagen Pastry.
You can find
pastry.
Him on Twitter
you
at
sons
Pete
of bitch.
Handelman.
Why don't you go back to Sweden?
Okay, let me just tell you about a little bit about my high school. And I'm not proud of this. This isn't like
your
bragging.
Your high school, you shouldn't be, since apparently you learned nothing about the American Depression.
My senior year, I missed 27 days of school. You could miss 28 and then not graduate. I missed 27. I knew those numbers, and I knew going in what
that
I had to do.
Seems like a really high number.
I quit. Here's what would happen, Hannes. Not only, and that's the days I just did not go to school. Often, though, I would go to school, okay?
Yeah.
It'd be like 10:30 in the morning. I'd pass my friend Kimmy Eddie in the hallway, and I'd look at her, and she'd look at me and be like, you want to fucking bail? Yeah, let's go. And we'd just walk out the door and go golfing. I kid you not, across the street. There was an 18-hole Pittsburgh North Golf Club and still is across from my high school.
Okay, that's weird.
Richland High School, which is now an elementary school, so now it's getting very confusing. But when
I
was there,
they finally realized that they were teaching on a fourth grade level and decided
Richland High School, we would just walk out. And we knew the attendance lady well.
But you were across the street. Couldn't somebody see you?
Yeah, no. It was just so... Where I went to school, Hannes, and where I grew up in outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, was suburban, yes, but it was suburban / rural. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
A lot of open spaces, a lot of roads with just a little stop sign beyond, as it were.
Yeah,
and
so
there's no traffic.
A lot of drinking, a lot of fucking, nothing else to do out there.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It was fighting and fucking.
Yeah.
That's not true. That's not true at all. Here's the thing.
It's so true.
Richland High School. I just wasn't engaged, unfortunately. And we did a lot of high school hijinks, and that's the topic tonight. Here's some of the things we would do.
I was not a hijinker.
Put smoke bombs. We would light smoke bombs and then drop them in the library book return. That's mature.
That is not a mature. See, today, that would cause the SWAT team to come, and they would lock down the school.
Right.
And there would be helicopters from the Pittsburgh, TV stations floating around. There'd be this possible terrorist attack.
One time, we were smoking pot in the parking lot. You know, back then, I'm sure kids still drive to school, but a lot of kids drove to school. It was the student parking lot. And we were smoking pot, and Pete Ioli came screaming out of the school. He came out of the school right toward us. He knew what something was going on.
Yeah.
He was the guidance counselor. He was also the poetry teacher. And
hippie.
Here's the thing. He was the mascot for the Pittsburgh Pirates. So he dressed up for the Pirate Games as a giant bird.
Now he's the coolest guy in school. Take away everything I said before.
He was the one who was dancing on top of the dugout.
Yeah.
Like Homer Simpson for
the Capital City. The Isotopes of Springfield Isotopes. Capital City, I don't know, but he was mentored by the Capital City Goofball.
That's right, the Goofball.
Voiced by Tom Poston.
Oh, good. God, learning.
Beginning his career on the Steve Allen Show, eventually appearing often with his good friend Bob Newhart on the Bob Newhart Show and Newhart.
There will be a quiz after this podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Stay tuned.
Tom Poston.
Bob Newhart, 85 years old. Did you know that?
Yeah.
How about that?
I love Bob Newhart.
I do too.
And the beauty part of a guy like Bob Newhart and his persona and his act, he can get as old as he wants. He was like when he was 30... He was a guy standing there. He could have been 85 then. So it's like he'll never go out of style.
Kind of like
He's
you,
the same
Hannes.
Guy.
You
exactly.
remind me of that, actually.
I am actually 78 years old.
So Pistol Pete Ioli, that's what we called him, Pete Ioli. We called him Pistol Pete. He comes out of the high school.
Did Pistol Pete get any of the girls pregnant in high school? Because this is what I see.
He was like a bald man, and he was short and old, and he was real character-y. No, he was real crazy.
Oh, he was gay. Okay, I see.
Yeah,
okay.
I think he was gay. Yeah. That's exactly right, now that I think of it. So he comes out straight toward us. What do I do with a joint, Hannes? What do I do?
swallow it.
I swallow it. That's exactly right.
It was the stupidest thing I think of, so I figured that was what you did.
Then I cough, and that was just the silliest thing.
You cough, and clouds of smoke are coming out as you're coughing.
One more thing about Pete Iole. He was the poetry teacher, and one time in poetry class, Cheryl Neugebauer stood up and said the following poem, as if she wrote it.
Yeah.
Yesterday, all my troubles seemed so far away, and now it looks as though they're here to stay. I believe in yesterday. The whole class cracks up, and Pistol Pete Iole says, "You kids, settle down. Cheryl's trying her best now. It's not the best poem, but she's trying."
Oh, wow.
You know, I mean, hilarity.
I guess he... Wait, was he being funny, or was he...
No,
did he seriously
had
not
no idea.
It?
He had no idea.
So he wasn't a hippie.
No, he wasn't a hippie. I already said that.
Okay, well...
Anyway, I was...
He wasn't smoking...
I didn't do... I was
smoking...
Yeah. I was not a good student in high school. That's all I'm trying to say. We did a lot of silly things. Skipped
a
lot of
school.
You were
okay up until a certain point.
Smoked
and then
a lot of pot. We would smoke pot, and then we'd go up to the stop and go, and we'd get Mellow cups and Reese cups, okay? You take them out of the packages, and you just layer. You know what I mean? So now you've got just this sandwich of gold.
Now this is where you're glowing. All you're talking about is how you created a Mallow Pop or whatever, Mallow Cup and
Mallow Cup, Reese Cup
sandwich.
Yeah.
By the way, the Mallow Cup, never heard of it, but I assume it has marshmallow in it?
Yeah.
Yeah, fuck that.
Oh, marshmallow. Love marshmallow.
Bullshit.
Chocolate. And coconut.
Hate marshmallow. Coconut and marshmallow are my two least favorite tastes
in
the whole world.
Oh my gosh, I love Mounds and Mallow Cups. There, I said it. Ladies and gentlemen.
Well, who doesn't love Mounds?
If you're out there listening. Okay, I want to tell one more silly thing we did in high school.
It's 3:05 in the morning here. What's the traffic like? Let's go to Dan in the copter.
Okay. Now, see, here's the thing. This is, it's not going to be funny to you, but it was really funny to me at the time, so I'm going to share it. You decide.
Okay.
One day, we skip school. There's three of us. We're driving through North Park. Of course, we're smoking pot. And we hit... Now, you can only go like 20 miles an hour through the park. It's very slow.
Yeah.
There's a huge pond, a lake, where there's many, many ducks. We were going to feed the ducks. That's what you do. You take some bread, you feed the ducks, you get stoned, you skip school.
Right.
We hit a duck in the car.
Oh.
Now, we're all stoned, just felt horrible. We back up. The duck stands up, shakes it off, walks very slowly to the side of the road, vomits... And then continues to walk into the woods. So we laughed for a week and a half.
It's now been
35 years. I'm still laughing.
That's pretty good, actually.
It was very funny.
Because I think that he was a drunk duck.
It was.
Cutting out of duck high school.
At first we felt horrible, but then he was all right.
No, he was fine. You don't know. You know, later, I mean, he developed a tumor in the spot you hit him, but that's not your fault.
Hey,
just
folks, listen.
Metacarsis.
Pete Handelman, he's got a story, and I look forward to hearing that. High school hijinks. But before we bring...
If I'm playing golf across the street from his high school, it's going to be really weird.
I'm actually not that bad at golf, I swear to God. I think that's because
great.
I learned
that's
in high
learned.
School.
Fantastic. American history, nothing. I can par three.
Before our storyteller comes on, we did want to mention that if you'd like to support Storyworthy, that would be great. Hannes, tell them how to do it.
Well, there are any number of ways. The best way, we would love you to do it, is to go to storywiththepodcast.com and click on the Patreon ad. That will take you to patreon.com/storyworthy, where we hope that you can help us with a donation of maybe $2 or $3 or $4 a month. It's not going to be difficult for you to do. It really, if we have a steady income, it makes this show plausible.
Exactly.
If there's no
plausible is the word.
If there's no money coming in, it becomes implausible.
Now, here's the thing with Patreon is it's for ongoing projects, ongoing creative projects.
Right. We're not raise like $40,000 and then we're making Storyworthy the movie.
No, we're already in the process.
Which will definitely have sex and violence in it.
Yes. My father always said that he had two things he liked about movies, sex and violence.
Yes.
So those are the two things. I agree.
Yeah.
Also, folks, you can follow us on Twitter at Storyworthy. And wherever you are, people, please stick around because Pete Handelman is on his way here. Next time on Storyworthy, we have comedian, radio personality, Frazier Smith.
Hi, guys. Yeah, that's me. I'll be talking about K-Rock and my start in radio.
That's next time on Storyworthy.
This is Sheila Ratner, and you're listening to Storyworthy. Now take off your clothes.
we're back. We have left Sherwood High School. We've now gone down to the river. We're in Hubbard Park, which is a beautiful park here in Sherwood. It's built along the Milwaukee River. And, you know, there's a big lodge here, and we're inside the lodge. We're waiting for the Sunday fish fry.
Well, that'll be good.
Oh, yeah.
Usually it's a Friday fish fry, isn't it? Friday fish fry.
Well, sometimes, but we have a special, like, they have a special, it's like a brunch and a fish fry, mm-hmm. because people in Wisconsin are not fat enough.
Interesting.
And put them together.
All right, you guys, Pete Handelman is here right now. He's a comedian, an actor, a voiceover artist, and a writer, and he just finished a six-week run of a one-act at the White Fire Theater. Where's that, Hannes?
White Fire Theater is on Ventura Boulevard.
I knew you'd know that.
Somewhere in Studio City, I believe. I saw... Fred Willard.
Oh, yeah.
You and I both saw that. Yeah. We saw Fred Willard doing a sketch comedy.
And we had Charlie Shannon's memorial there.
That's right. That's right.
Boy,
and Fred Willard did not masturbate at all during the show.
Wait, what?
I remember he got arrested a couple of years ago for masturbating in a
theater. Oh, Fred Willard.
Which is
fine. Yeah. That was on Santa
Fred
Monica
Willard can
Boulevard.
Do whatever the hell he wants.
Oh, it's the silliest thing, isn't it?
I think if I saw Fred Willard masturbating, I'd be like, that's the greatest performance art I've ever seen.
You know, he was on Hollywood Game Night. He's such a fun guy.
Great guy.
Oh, he's awesome. He's just, he was the go-to improv guy before people really knew what improv was.
Yeah.
You know?
I did a scene with him on Jimmy Kimmel Live, now I'm dropping names, with Fred Willard, where he kisses me goodbye. I'm like the wife.
Oh, okay.
And remember, he has that in the piece, you guys, obviously, in the sketch. He takes a pill. It's like Viagra.
Yeah.
And it makes his penis so hard that when he kisses his wife goodbye, I put his briefcase on his erect penis. And he says, bye, honey. And he puts it on, and then he turns
comedy.
Around.
Comedy. Da-da-da-da-da-da.
All right.
Comedy.
Let's go back to Pete Handelman.
Penis.
All right, you guys. So he did recently, he did a documentary called Mr. Movie Poster. It's very interesting. He produced it, directed it, and edited it. And it's about the people, Hannes, you'd be interested in this,
yes.
who used to draw and create and conceptualize movie posters.
Right, back when movie posters were works of art and not just kind of
very
put together pieces of photographs.
I think you're going to really get along with Pete Handelman. That's what I think.
Yes, I already am. We've already taken our pants off.
So that documentary is going to hit the festival circuit later this year. And you can find Pete on Twitter at Pete Handelman and on YouTube / Pete Handelman. All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for Pete Handelman.
. 1981 was my first year of high school. I got a job at Baskin and Robbins scooping ice cream at the Brentwood Country Mart in West Los Angeles. I made $3.10 an hour, minimum wage at the time, and I was required to wear brown pants. It was a hard job, lugging heavy tubs of sticky ice cream from a walk-in freezer and scooping stubborn flavors that challenged your tricep. Every night after we closed, I dragged a nasty industrial mop across the floor. My fellow employee, who was Vin Scully's son, always sat on the counter and watched me while paging through Cream magazine. One time, I made a pint of orange sherbet for Carl Malden. He became enraged that I didn't weigh the container, feeling his pint was underpacked. By the time I added more in fear, the top looked like an orange Humpty Dumpty. I thought he was going to reach across the counter and deck me. 1981. Baskin and Robbins ruled the ice cream scene. Pink bubblegum ice cream and dripping Moa Moa Punch fountain machines. The specialty flavor, for a month or two, promoted a Village People movie called Can't Stop the Music. And in a stroke of genius, Baskin and Robbins called that flavor Can't Stop the Nuts. Tim and Gloria were the owners of the store where I worked, a grim couple who never cracked a smile. Everyone hated them because they were penny pinchers and ball busters. Now, hands-on Tim and Gloria had a curious way of letting employees lock up for them at night. We were instructed to lock the door and throw the key as far as we could inside through a mail slot in the door. But the mail slot was thin, your wrist would get caught, and it was easy to just drop the keys accidentally on the floor below. Meanwhile, I was awake well past midnight on weekdays rehearsing with the drama department. One of my best friends, a composer and musician in the show, was Jeff Martin. After rehearsal, Jeff and I would occasionally go looking for trouble. One night, Jeff and I decided to case the Baskin-Robbins and look for a sloppily dropped key. Earlier, we had twisted open a clothing hanger with a hook at one end. We were going to break in. I thought, fuck it. Fuck Carl Malden. Fuck Tim and Gloria. And fuck Cream Magazine. Sure enough, on our first run, the key was sitting on the floor directly below the mail slot. We were ready to make a move. But wait a minute. Jeff had to take a crap. Some of our more dangerous stunts upset Jeff's stomach, and doing his business would often soothe the nerves. Jeff disappeared behind a trash dumpster in the Brentwood Country Mart parking lot. I guess you could say that this stunt literally scared the crap out of him. We grabbed the wire hanger and scooped up the keys. I opened the door and went inside. Jeff played the role of getaway driver in his burgundy VW Scirocco. I quickly hid behind the ice cream counter. I could smell caramel and that dirty mop. There was an unlocked safe with hundreds and hundreds of dollars. But my haul? Two decked-out hot fudge sundaes with almonds and whipped cream. I ran out, locked the door, threw in the key, and hopped into the getaway car. Joy Division was blaring as Jeff sped down San Vicente Boulevard. I guess we were kind crooks, or stupid crooks, I'm not sure which. But of course, one time wasn't enough for us. We decided to swipe the key and do this stupid stunt again. And then again, and again, about 12 or 15 times. Just for kicks and sundaes. In fact, thinking back on it, after all those break-ins, the only discernible damage left behind were probably Jeff's next-day semi-hardened stools, which probably sent shockwaves throughout the Brentwood Country Mart community. By now it was summer and school was over. No longer able to stay out late for rehearsals, Jeff and I had a new racket. I would sneak out of my bedroom window late at night, tiptoe down the roof, and jump into my parents' driveway, where Jeff was waiting in the getaway car in his Calvin Klein bomber jacket. Jeff gave me his order and parked with the engine running. Talking Heads' Good Thing was blasting through the speakers. Now, sometimes, if the key was not accessible, I would reach up above the door and pull out those thin slats of glass, which were a 70s window staple, and a criminal doggy door. So after sliding out the window panes, I would parkour myself up and over the door and then inside. Jeff said to me, "You look like a monkey." But we agreed to never take a dime. Just made sundaes and enjoyed bragging rights in our inner circle. Eventually, our friend Pete Libby gave us a long metallic wand with a powerful magnet at the end. Now breaking in was a piece of cake. But one night, everything went wrong. It began with our decision to change course and empty the safe. I am not proud of this. We were 16. Stupid brats. I figured that cash would mean more quarters for Asteroids and Ms. Pac-Man. I could buy that Pretenders album. I was no longer an employee and didn't feel connected to the store, so we pulled the key, I ran in, and stuffed my pockets with cash. Jeff gave me the signal, and I ran out. He drove away. Success. But then we got greedy. We drove to another Baskin-Robbins a few miles away that we knew nothing about. There was no key on the floor, so we walked back to Jeff's car. A few seconds later, an LAPD squad car drove towards us and about a block away. Jeff and I panicked, and in unison, we both ran up a nearby staircase. The cops saw us run and began circling the block. We were frozen in fear at the top of that dark staircase for about 20 minutes. At one point, the cops got out of their car and felt the hood of Jeff's Scirocco. One of them said, "It's hot." They drove away but kept circling. Jeff and I became convinced they were onto our earlier heist. The sound of the cruising squad car below us finally disappeared, and it was getting late. You can run, but you can't hide. So we scurried down the staircase, but seconds later, the cruiser hauled ass towards us. We had hundreds of dollars split between us in our pockets and flung it all desperately to the ground. I struggled to pull all the bills out of my pegged green Levi's from Fred Siegel. Tires screeched. Doors fled open. "Freeze!" And suddenly I was staring at the business end of a 9mm Glock 45. Fortunately, it was dark, so the cops never saw the cash on the street. But handcuffed, then stuck in the back seat of a cruiser and fingerprinted down at the station. Then locked up. Alone, thank God. Sitting in the jail cell overnight, lots of things go through your mind. I kept worrying about the waist-size 52 undies you're apparently given on the inside. Would I somehow have to make a cinch to make them hug my waist properly? Hours seemed like days, but we were released just after sunrise. As it turned out, the cops had no knowledge of our heist. We were arrested for being out past curfew. My parents thought I was asleep in my room and had to pick me up at the station. I was in deep shit. Why did I do this? The adrenaline rush, I guess. Poor decision-making. During high school, our crew didn't shy away from living on the edge, and sometimes breaking the law would win brownie points from your peers at that age. But being jailed by LA's finest was not an experience I wanted to relive, so I tried to mellow out. That meant no more breaking into ice cream shops. No more mushrooms with friends on the empty set of MASH. No more hopping over fences into golf courses to slide down the links on a huge block of ice. And definitely no more Lemon 714 Quaaludes. To this day, I get nostalgic when driving by a Baskin-Robbins. I think about serving Carl Malden and Suzanne Summers and all of her taster spoons. I think about Scully's braces and his stupid stare and the 2.5-ounce scoop we were instructed to make with an S motion on the ice cream surface. And yes, I think about the small amount of my own urine that I once added to the fountain machine of Moa Moa Punch. God help me. I guess you could say that for a short while in the early 80s at the Brentwood Country Mart Baskin and Robbins, there was a 30-second flavor. And that's my story. Very good.
Lead me up to that.
Married the lead.
I was trying to impress some of my fellow employees. I think I took a pink and brown polka dotted cup into the bathroom. Small amount. Didn't want to saturate.
Okay, so you didn't have to stand up on a counter
right.
and put your penis into
right,
it.
Right, right.
Well, no, he's not an animal.
I went and peed
so
privately.
So it's even more deliberate, really, because you had to go into a separate room. Do your business, put it in the cup, probably wash your hands, walk out, show everybody the cup, smell it.
I did not make
and
this
smell.
You could have just faked it, but you didn't because you're an American.
You're a criminal.
It's, it was premeditated.
I like you're not mentioning the money stealing at all. It's all about that.
Well,
but it's true.
Understand.
Putting
What's
urine
Moa
is
Moa
much worse.
Anyway, what's a Moa?
Moa Moa Punch was just their crappy
sugar
punch.
Was it pink or was it yellow?
Yeah, it was like reddish.
Reddish. Oh,
oddly enough, so was his urine in high school. He was like an old man.
This is such a great story.
Yeah. Now, I have to say, first of all, the Brentwood Country Mart, for people who outside the country who don't know, is it's supposed to be sort of a little country mart with little stores and stands. But it was in Brentwood, which is one of the richest places in America. So all these famous people, now it's kind of known for TMZ. They go and they hide out and wait for people. But it's like always famous people would be there. Carl Malden and, like you said, Suzanne Summers.
Yeah, I think it's been there since the 50s as like a kind of an old school.
And so how long did you work there total?
I'm going to guess maybe a little over a year.
Okay. And I bet you had a lot of good times there, though, right? Didn't you laugh your ass off with your fellow employees and stuff?
I did. I checked with a couple of them, and one of them told me that I threw a bag of rocks into the vent of the bathroom to scare Howie Goldstein, One Brow How, as we called him. And there were lots of shenanigans.
Now, did you live in Brentwood, I assume?
Yes. I'm originally from New York, and my folks moved to Los Angeles, and that was the nearest ice cream shop.
Okay.
That my friends had worked there and got me the job. And
yeah.
Was wrong with the owners, Tim, and what's wrong with them?
They just it was something about their attitude. We didn't like them. So maybe deep inside this was a retribution for 16 me.
16-year-olds who didn't like someone? That's impossible.
Yeah, right.
No, but I mean, it must have been something going on or you wouldn't have robbed them.
They were just, they were bastards. They were mean. They never cracked a smile.
I see.
I think eventually
something was always wrong with our outfit. With the hat was not worn properly. If you weren't wearing the hat, you were in trouble. It was just
too much.
Yeah,
lots of.
What? How did you make the leap between? Okay, so you're sneaking in. I can totally see myself sneaking in with a key and stealing ice cream and then sneaking back out. Like I could see myself doing that.
As far as I can tell, you did it so many times you got bored with it and then just decided to steal the money because it was.
Yeah, how did you get amped up?
Something new, something different. I think we figured that, we took the money and we would go in and take the Sundays on nights that I did not work because our theory was that that way if something was left, looked wrong, was left askew, they would blame it on whoever was working that night, which is what happened the night that we emptied the safe. I'm assuming that whoever worked that night.
You're going to throw them under the bus.
The owners were, hey, where's the cash? And they got fired. So.
Right.
That was our justification. We thought we were so smart.
Right.
Yeah. I know. By the way, have you noticed how we have a new trend on Story Worthy of people revealing their criminal past?
Brant Tobler. Same thing.
Except that he ran
stole $1.5 million
from Dillard's in Idaho or Montana.
No, in Wyoming.
What the fuck? Who cares? It's all a bunch of fucking rednecks out there. Anyhow. Love you, Wyoming.
Sister. And how old is, is she younger or older than you?
She's about 2 years, 2 months older than me.
Older than you. Okay. Uh-huh. So when she found out what her little brother did, what did she think?
I was, I don't even know that, I'm trying to think, she might have been away at college. I don't know if she even heard or remembers the story, but
I want to hear about the ride home from the police station. They call, they wake your parents up and say, "We have your son."
It was
in
quiet.
Custody.
Yeah. It was not good.
Right. Yeah. See, this
it was
is,
the only time
way,
I was ever grounded.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This is the essence of white people. The worse it is, the quieter it is.
Yeah, the and more like, silence is the more deafening.
Yeah, there was no yelling.
Staring at a small spot on the dashboard and picking at it, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, you just, yeah, just.
And so what was the punishment?
I was grounded, I don't know. I don't remember the extent. I think it was just sort of a week
nothing.
Or two. Yeah,
that's
it's not
nothing.
Bad.
See, I can't imagine hitting a child, but if I had a child and they got to be 16 and they were a boy and they did that, I think I would have to slap them.
No, you wouldn't.
I would have to.
Have you ever hit your cats?
No, of course not.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Yeah, but the cats never grow out of being two-year-olds.
They shit
never hit
all over the house.
So do I.
I don't
what do you
know.
Want from me?
I don't know if his cats shit all over the
cats
house.
My cats don't shit over. One of the cats pees in inappropriate places. But
well, why don't you smack it upside the head?
No. I'm talking about I would never hit a two-year-old boy, but a 16-year-old boy, I've met 16-year-old boys like, you should just be slapped across the face.
Oh, God,
at that age, they just eat and they're a waste of human flesh.
Yeah. No, you don't. Yeah. See, you're being too. You're mom. You're being momish, and mom is like, don't. A father understands that his 16-year-old son is worthless.
Yeah.
He may someday be president of the United States, but right at the moment, from 14 to 18, he's just a walking asshole.
Yeah. Sucking
and he
up
needs
oxygen
to just live in fear. Of something.
Wow.
They live in fear of nothing. It's not mean.
I'm just saying the fact that you don't have children, I think, is advantageous to the world.
Well, if I had a child now, by the time they were 16, I would have to hire someone to slap them.
Wow.
Because I would be so old. So that's not going to happen. Now, wait a minute. If you told us a story and you say, we got home, and for the first time in my life and the last time in my life, the one time my dad slapped me, would you really be, you'd be like, I deserve that. I mean, would you really be like, oh, my God, I can't believe my dad slapped me, even though I crawled out of the house and committed a felony?
Right. It would seem because back in the day, we all kind of got.
If they'd found the money, you would have been in prison.
Hannes, you make it sound so bad.
No, but.
I mean, I'm thinking ice cream, a little bit of urine, some coins.
They're so lucky they didn't see the money. I mean, that's the thing is you're so lucky you just got arrested for the curfew.
Did you ever want to go back to try and see if the money was around?
Jeff and I were talking about this. Jeff is still a great friend, and we talked about this the other day.
Of course he is, because you're in cahoots.
Yeah, through a glass wall, because he's, of course, in prison now. But
we both independently, I don't think we were allowed to speak to each other, but we talked about this. We both independently went back to the site of the arrest, and he said that he found 120 kind of twisted around the chain link fence. I didn't find anything. We both went.
All right, two slaps. All right.
Some lucky person found it.
Wow, yeah, that would be such a find. I would be so excited if I just
Carl
money
Malden
all over.
Found it.
Good for them. Better that they had
By
it
the
than
way,
Tim.
By the way, Carl Malden was pissy with you over the ice cream? I mean,
he was a bastard.
Let me guess his favorite flavor was, I'm going to guess it was like rum raisin or that cherry one.
He got orange sherbet.
Oh my gosh!
No,
even worse.
I'm a sherbet.
Even worse.
No. I like sherbet. I like
really,
vanilla
honest?
Or sherbet. These are my two.
You're
choices.
82 years old.
I am. But wait, I want to hear Carl Malden. So he seems like a nice guy. You're saying he was just a prick.
He was a real bastard. Yeah.
Wow, that's fascinating to me.
You would get the feel for what a pint felt like and weighed, but we were encouraged if at times. You could stick it on a scale. We did have a scale in the shop, and I think Malden was aware of that process and the fact that I skipped the scale.
Yeah,
just really rubbed him the wrong way.
I mean, the fact of the matter is to be unhappy person in an ice cream shop is to only be terrified.
Time,
where he, what would he
70s,
would be like
right?
in another
What'd
place?
You say the 80s?
Early 80s.
He had been a successful actor for 30 years by that point.
Yeah,
he was in the movies. He was in the waterfront. He was in the streets of San Francisco. He had a gigantic amount of money and was a very famous person. And for him to be upset that you might have skipped him a little bit on the ice cream pint is incredible to me. It shouldn't be because people in Hollywood are crazy. But
so what did I'm just curious what your parents did for a living.
My dad is a lawyer, entertainment lawyer. My mom... stay-at-home mom.
So that's why you're marrying an entertainment lawyer. But you understood the industry then growing up? You understood the show business industry?
Yes, just because I had visited, you know, Fox, where my dad worked for many years, and I had friends that, you know, that acted or did things in the entertainment industry. So, yeah.
Did you feel special in that respect? And I'm only asking because, you know, I grew up in Pittsburgh. Hannes grew up in Milwaukee. And we thought, especially in the 80s before the internet and everything, we thought, you know, people that lived in California were incredibly privileged. And I think you probably were. Did you feel that?
Well, I came from kind of, I came from a more lower middle Brooklyn, New York reality. So to come to Brentwood was a bit of a shock. My dad got the job at Fox and suddenly things were better for us.
How old were you?
When we came to Los Angeles, I was 11.
So within 5 years, you were a criminal.
Yes.
So I'm just saying. Here's a question.
Complaining about his celebrity client, fucking Carl Malden.
I want to hear more about growing up in Los Angeles because, like, to me, doing mushrooms and running around the set of MASH is like my best day ever.
I assume you mean the right set now, in that's the my best Malibu, day ever. Malibu Creek Park.
Well,
the outdoor.
Because, as you said earlier, Christine, this was an era when there was no security, there was no video cameras. I had worked as an intern at Fox, and one night late at night, I was with a couple of friends of mine, and I knew that if I just name dropped my dad's name, the security would just kind of wave me through.
Wow.
You could give, you know, I'm going to give my buddies a tour of the lot. So we went in there one night. They waved us in. We were coming onto mushrooms, and the soundstage. I think the majority of the footage was shot in Fox in Central City at the time.
The soundstage was the outdoor set.
Yeah, was open, and we walked in. And I remember we were bicycling through the set with Vietnamese dummies slung over our shoulder, partying in Hawkeye's room. And
the swamp, as I recall, it was called the swamp.
Every room had three walls, and the fourth wall was, I guess, where they put the cameras and filmed.
Yeah.
We wound up eventually in the dressing room where people, you know, there's the makeup lights and everything.
Yeah.
And my buddy John had a crush on Tori, this gal who was with us. And he said, "You get up on that bed." There was like a cot in the dressing room. And all of a sudden, a cop appeared. The dressing room,
yeah.
We talked about this later. We were terrified, a security cop, and he kind of sheepishly looked at us and said, "Oh, hey, guys, I got to lock up here. So when you're done," I guess he just thought we were actors.
Yeah, screwing around.
Reflecting back on it, we just thought that was a key moment.
Yeah, that is key.
And it was just.
I can't believe you were wearing pants from Fred Siegel. I mean, that can't be cheap.
Well, you would go, I don't know that I necessarily got them at Fred Siegel, but you would go to Fred Siegel because they would taper them and peg them at the bottom.
I see.
Which was kind of the look.
They probably do that now.
Yeah, maybe they still have the service.
Yeah.
With and the new skinny jeans, all these guys.
Yeah, it was kind of the first skinny,
but
not
generation
quite
a
skinny, maybe.
Boys who are going to be sterile because their nuts are being squished
well,
by these
skinny
jeans.
Now a lot of guys are
jeans.
Wearing red pants and light pink pants, which are not light pink pants, but like a darker pink, a salmon pink. I dig it. I see it in the morning when I drop my child off at school.
Well, all this
on
stuff
the
is,
playground, all the super hip dads are wearing these really cool
pants.
Well,
yeah, the idea of like colors, that just changes. I went into some in Glendale. I went into some, like, it was an old, the first doctor in Glendale's house. It's a little museum. And
wait, this was for entertainment?
No. I'm about to make a point about colors, which is in the 1800s, baby boys were wrapped in pink and baby girls were wrapped in blue.
Hmm.
We now do the exact opposite.
Yeah, that's weird.
But it's just made up, like, pink is gay. It's like, pink is not feminine. We just decided kind of that it is. So now we're deciding now it's not again.
So where
now
did you learn this from?
This was a small museum in Glendale in Brand Park.
Oh, I see.
Mr. Brand founded Glendale back in, I don't know when he founded Glendale, but there's a guy named Brand.
Or like Lucky Baldwin in Baldwin Hills.
Yes, or Luther Burbank.
Yes.
Or D.W. Griffith.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
But
all
that's
right.
Not, D.W. Griffith is not the Griffith Park.
Yes, it is. He is
no,
the
it's
Griffith
not.
Park.
D.W. Griffith was a famous silent film director. Griffith W. Griffith.
Oh, yeah. Griffith is the
was the
one.
Guy who may or may not have murdered his wife's
he murdered
lover
his wife.
And got off by donating the park to the city of
that's
Los
right,
Angeles.
That's right, but it wasn't his wife's lover. It was his wife.
Oh, it was his wife, yeah.
Yeah, Griffith murdered his wife. She was on her knees. He put a bullet in the back of her head. and to get off
this
and not
you
do
know.
Jail time. He gave
Roosevelt,
the city of Los Angeles.
You never heard of, but this he got
like
down.
82, I love Griffith Park. It's the largest urban park in the United
States,
ladies and gentlemen.
And it's literally covered in blood. So
housing,
there you go. Enjoy your
the Griffith
Ikea.
Observatory, the Hollywood sign,
sorry,
the
Pete,
LA Zoo, Gene Autry Museum. Oh,
it's
my
a fine
gosh.
Place.
There are lots of grisly murders took place up there.
No, I'm saying it's covered in the blood of Griffith's wife.
Oh, right.
Because he never
right.
would have given up his hacienda if he didn't have to get out of jail time.
Her blood on his hands.
And yes. So you stay in Los Angeles. Did you ever move anywhere else?
No. I went to first year of college was in Boulder, then mm-hmm. transferred to Boston University. Stuck around in Boston for a while and then came back to the City of Angels.
That's awesome. It sounds
Did
great.
Did you graduate?
Yet from Boston University,
yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Hey,
but
listen,
you,
tell Hannes a little
Home
bit, or
golden.
Tell the audience a little bit about Mr. Movie Poster, and then we're going to play some Shotgun Storyworthy if
yes.
you can.
Sounds good. Yes, Mr. Movie Poster. We have a website, MrMoviePoster.com, tells the story of Paul Criffo, who is now 92. Mm-hmm. Mr. Criffo is an illustrator and designer who grew up in New York. His posters include In the Heat of the Night, The Producers, Mahogany, and just a lot of beautiful stuff that, as Hannes mentioned, this was pre-Photoshop era when posters were done by hand. We've been working on it for 5 years. It is now in post-production.
Ooh, how exciting.
Yes.
Yeah, this is right up my alley. I love this stuff. Now, what's his name again?
Paul Criffo.
It's C-R-I-F-O.
Yes, correct.
Interesting. Hey, listen, you want to play some Shotgun Storyworthy?
Let's do it.
It can only mean one thing. It's time for Shotgun Storyworthy.
The game where our storyteller spins the storyworthy wheel of truth and tells a true one-minute story about the topic it lands on.
So everybody, say it with me.
Spin that wheel!
Fish. My ex-wife had a tank of fish and, I'm trying to remember which of the two fish. One of the fish was picking on the other fish, and we would kind of wave our finger at it. We would try anything we could to discourage the big fish from picking on the little fish.
Yeah.
Nothing seemed to work. So one time, I decided to walk up to the fish tank and expose myself to the fish. I think it distracted him temporarily. But, and I'm sure we hear this every day wherever you go. My ex-wife said to me, "Don't you threaten my fish with your cock."
Yay! Oh. Boy, you see, that's a perfect Shotgun Storyworthy
question.
That's
good. Beginning,
right?
Middle, and end.
Yeah, and
with
you think
little,
yourself,
with a tag on the
who
end.
Who doesn't have a fish story? Do you know what I mean?
Right. I'd be hard-pressed, but I certainly... I like that you got your cock involved in your fish story.
Listen.
I have a feeling no matter what you pulled out of there, it would end with something about your penis. I'm just saying.
I am so happy you could come and hang out with us today.
This
thank
was
you
a blast.
So much. You're
thank
so,
you,
you're
thank
so
you,
talented.
Thank you.
You do so many things. It's
you
like
guys you're, are.
You have creativity just bursting out of you.
I'm
bursting.
I'm blowing a kiss.
And I enjoy your Twitter feed.
Oh, and I love yours.
Do you?
I love yours.
No,
yeah,
you don't love Hannes. It's because he's not active.
Yeah, he's
see,
a,
now
once
that was
every
a lie.
3 months, he's like, "I'm eating a Snickers." No.
That's good. Hang on. That's gold. That's gold, Jerry. Let me put that on there.
All right, you guys, we're going to wrap it up right about now. I want to thank everybody here at Sideshow Network, including Scott Christopher, our new sound guy, who Hannes is now going to be leaving us.
Son of a bitch!
It's like our sound guys are like the drummers from Spinal Tap.
Yes.
They just...
They explode, they choke on their own vomit.
And they're gone.
They disappear.
And so we've got somebody else
He got some high-paying job. He's going to be... I believe he's going to be a drug mule.
I believe
that's
exactly
what
he said.
Yeah.
That's exactly... It's going to be Hail Mary full of Scott is what it's going to be. All right, you guys. I'd also like to thank Sean Merrick over there and, of course, Colin. Darren McAvee.
Yes.
And John Thomas Griffith. You know, John. He's the guy that wrote our theme song.
Speaking of drug mules...
And on behalf of you, Pete Handelman, thank you so much
for
coming in. What a pleasure, really.
I love you.
You're really fun. And of course, you, Hannes Finney, my dear friend and co-host. My name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story-worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com. I'll keep you
like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger. Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years. One of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.